Hugh Grant, Dennis Moynihan, David Prude, Dennis McCorbett, Matt Ely, Anna Osbeck, Emily Anderson, Dante Torrieri, and Buffy St. Marie Hernandez. To see our Democracy Now! Video and audio podcast, you can go to where you like to get your podcasts. We're also all over social media. Tell your friends about Democracy Now! We are corporate-free, people-powered. I'm Amy Goodman.
Puberty is when you grow into your adult body, usually between 8 and 14 years old. All that growing brings changes that may make you feel scared, confused, excited, or all of the above. It's all good. You're just maturing. Puberty is a process that lasts years, hits differently for everybody, and can last till you're around 20. So how do the changes show up? You may get pimples, mostly on your face, but on your body too. Hair. The hair you have on your arms and legs may get thicker and darker, and you'll likely grow hair in new places, like your face, armpits, chest, and pubic area. Stretch marks are common too, a sign of your adult body taking shape. Physical changes, from body odor to growth spurts, are just part of the puberty story. All kinds of new feelings may come on too, like crushes and being sexually turned on. It's super common to feel like your emotions suddenly turn on and off, sad, angry, or irritated. No matter how you're feeling about all these changes to your body, remember that puberty is a normal part of growing up, and knowing what to expect can help to make it feel a lot less weird or stressful. Want to learn more? Go to PlannedParenthood.org/teens.
And it's just about 6 o'clock here on a Tuesday night. You're listening to WUSB in Stony Brook, broadcasting at 90.1 FM, 107.3 FM, and over the entire Internet at WUSB.FM. It's 6 o'clock, as I mentioned, and that means it's time for Off the Wall. very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the War, and Emmanuel, did I just say Off the War? I'm sorry. No, that's not what it's called. It's called Off the Wall. What's wrong with me? I guess I have war in the brain or something, or I'm just feeling feisty. All right. File that one away. We'll come back to that. Off the Wall for now. Just put a placeholder there. Emmanuel Goldstein here. Kyle is over there.
Yeah, I'm sort of, just observing.
Yeah, I think you might have some more of those little hiccups to look forward to. Definitely interesting times this last week. Boy, there's been a lot of, if it were a war, a lot of attacks within the last 7 days. And we're going to try and focus on some of them and come out of it with hopefully a positive viewpoint as far as what our abilities are and the fact that we're not going to be victims. I'd like to believe that. But first, more importantly, I had some clickbait show up on my phone. Now, I call this clickbait because when I look at my news aggregator on my phone, there's always this this tab to the left. And somehow you always wind up looking at those stories. And usually they're stories that are either too good to be true, or they never quite get to the point. And this just happened before the show, and I didn't have a chance to really look at it. But the headline intrigued me. It says, Harrisburg included in proposed L.A. to New York City high-speed rail route. Now, I'm a train guy. I like to think I'm a train guy, in a good way. If there had been a proposed high-speed rail line from New York City to Los Angeles, something that I've been advocating since I was three, I don't think it would have escaped my attention. And yet, somehow, I'm looking at a story right now that seems to claim otherwise from a site called PennLive.com. PennLive.com. Well, it certainly sounds legitimate. So if you don't mind, if you can indulge me just for a moment, I'm going to read the story literally for the first time. Because I am intrigued with the idea that somebody is actually talking seriously about a high-speed rail route to Los Angeles from New York. Now, there is a rail route. We've taken it. It goes from New York City up to Albany, around to Buffalo, down through Michigan to Chicago. It's basically a tour of the outer part of the United States. And you switch trains in Chicago after a day, and then two more days you can be in Los Angeles if you decide to take that one. Or you can be in Seattle or Portland or New Orleans or, name it. But there has never been, or at least not in our lifetimes, something that goes directly from New York to Los Angeles at high speed. So this is very interesting to me. So a proposed high-speed rail line connecting Los Angeles to New York City would include a stop in Harrisburg. And is that the lead? That is the headline of this? That this proposed line I never heard of before is going to stop in Harrisburg? I mean, okay, stop in Harrisburg. I don't care. As long as there's a high-speed rail line, kind of slows it down a little bit, but fine. Let's stop there. Dubbed the Transcontinental Chief. They have a name for it, the Transcontinental Chief. This is ridiculous. I don't even know if I should keep reading. Well, people tune in for the shock, so here we go. The line would be up and running in time for the 2026 FIFA World Cup. Now, I know we don't all pay attention, but the 2026 FIFA World Cup is next year. Now, I don't know a lot, but I'm pretty sure you can't build a cross-country high-speed rail line in this country in less than a year.
Not with that attitude.
All right. Don't put it on me. If it could happen, I've suggested. I have said, you can make the rail line part of China, all right, and hire people from China to do it, and you could even make it so that if you commit a crime on the rail line, you get prosecuted in China. Win-win for everybody. And I'll bet it gets built fast and probably pretty cheap and good, too, because look at their rail system. They did that pretty fast. So don't say I don't have the right attitude to get this built. I do. This is hard to believe. Ameristar Rail. Really? That's the name you came up with? Ameristar Rail? I mean, all right, fine. It's a Delaware startup company, all right, specializing in high-speed and intermodal passenger rail. I'm curious what is on their resume as far as what they've built or anything. I've never heard Ameristar Rail before. They pitched the idea to Amtrak and President Donald Trump's administration. Okay, this is where the story starts to make a little more sense, because if this has anything at all to do with Trump, all kinds of fantasy worlds are likely to be invoked. The company said it would offer coast-to-coast service in less than 72 hours. That's 3 days. Well, it actually takes 3 days now, right? 1 day to Chicago and 2 days to the West Coast. So, all right, I'm not really sure what the difference is. It's, and we don't call that high speed. They want to use, okay, they want to use existing infrastructure owned by Amtrak and other regional rail lines. The plan includes carrying vehicles, including trucks with freight, as well as passengers. Kind of sounds like the freight system that already exists, except maybe let a few people on as well.
Oh, maybe they'll just have freight trains that have, like, containers of like cars, like containers with windows that people can be in.
You know, I'm desperate enough where I'm willing to give that a try. But what worries me here is that infrastructure owned by Amtrak. First of all, there is no infrastructure owned by Amtrak. The Northeast Corridor is owned by Amtrak, but I don't think anything going cross-country is. So I'm worried this is a sneaky way of trying to take over or shut down Amtrak. That's what I'm seeing in the story. Ameristar Rail is modeling the project after Europe's truck transport trains and wants to fund it through private investors, not taxpayers. The transcontinental chief will be a great opportunity for Amtrak to team up with the private sector to confront the challenges of its money-losing long-distance trains. Yeah, now I'm getting it. And create opportunities to usher in a profitable golden age of rail travel for passengers and truckers with the ingenuity of free enterprise as we celebrate our great nation's 250th birthday next year, said Scott Spencer, Ameristar Rail's chief operating officer. And sounds kind of like a clone of Trump, but we'll have to look into that a little further. A map of the proposed route. Oh, it's a map. It stops in Pittsburgh, Harrisburg, and Philadelphia, as well as places such as Tyrone and Reading. It doesn't stop anywhere besides Pennsylvania. Well, this is probably a Pennsylvania story, so I guess that's all they care about. But they hope to launch the line by May 10th, 2026, to coincide with the United States' 250th anniversary celebrations and the FIFA World Cup. You mean those are happening at the same time? Oh, that's going to be hard to stomach. Newsweek reports, I've heard of them, the new route would replace Amtrak's Southwest Chief. Okay, now, finally, we get to the meat of the matter here. So you want to replace the Southwest Chief and the Pennsylvania lines and rely on existing infrastructure from host railroads, including BNSF, Norfolk Southern, and New Jersey Transit. That's the only passenger line in that list. All right. Well, that's interesting. First time hearing about it. We'll see if that goes anywhere. But I'm not going to be very hopeful about that. And it's not really, it's not high speed. High speed could get you across the country inside of 2 days. That's how it should be anyway. Okay, so what else? Today, the United States has announced that we are leaving UNESCO. It's not the first time either. Basically, the United Nations Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization. That's what UNESCO stands for. And you can see by the name why that would be considered a threat. Continued involvement in UNESCO. Actually, I'm reading from the State Department press release here. So continued involvement in UNESCO is not in the national interest of the United States. UNESCO works to advance divisive social and cultural causes and maintains an outsized focus on the UN's Sustainable Development Goals, a globalist ideological agenda for international development at odds with the America First foreign policy. Well, sure, democracy is at odds with the America First foreign policy. It's a fascist movement. It's something that basically trods upon the people of the world. And tries to give the United States even more of an unfair advantage. So, yeah, I guess, you know, any other agenda would be a threat to that. So UNESCO's decision to admit the state of Palestine as a member state is highly problematic. Really? That was the button. All right. Continued U.S. participation in international organizations will focus on advancing American interests with clarity and conviction. Well, good luck with that. Good luck with that. I'm sure you'll be able to find some fascist regime somewhere that will embrace you. But it ain't going to be anything attached to the UN, United Nations of the world, the whole rest of the world, who I hope will start speaking up louder, acting stronger against what we are doing. Because it is not good. It is not good at all. Not as bad as Israel, though. Oh, my God. The Israeli military strip-searched and detained World Health Organization staff in Gaza, badly damaged a critical warehouse of supplies. This is according to the UN, who our administration and Israel is trying to teach us is not to be trusted. The United Nations, the World Health Organization, anything that does not prop up their regimes and do anything they say. This is sick. This is true sickness. The organization warned the incidents would cripple efforts to sustain a collapsing health system in a region where 2 million people, 2 million people, are in desperate need of humanitarian aid, including food and medicine. Just the idea of aid workers being strip searched and detained. Having just watched Shoah, you know, a massive documentary, which is definitely something to see. It's going to last about 8 or 10 hours.
Yeah, we completed it.
We did. But there's so much more. We just saw what made it to the film. There's hundreds of hours of footage. And this is about the Holocaust. And it is sobering. I do believe everybody should see that. But to hear that this is what Israel is now, a regime that terrorizes innocent people, that literally kills people waiting in line for food. Every day you see that headline. And every day we don't seem to care. You know, this is normal now. It's sickness. It really is. And that regime has just turned into one of the most barbaric on the planet. It needs to go. And I really wish Israeli people would do something about that. Because the only hope to save Israel is to get rid of the people running it now. Because it's not going to survive this. It, you know, you may be able to massacre people for a while and somehow convince yourself you're doing the right thing. But eventually justice will catch up to you. And that goes for people that turn a blind eye as well. And that certainly goes for us. If we continue to enable this and financially support it and spread lies, because, boy, there are a lot of lies being spread here. This is just insane. I mean, it goes on and on, the horrible details, and you lose track. If you don't read the news for one day, you miss out on another horrible thing that happened to a bunch of innocent people. We're not talking about, you know, soldiers fighting back. They call it a war. Wars involve, you know, back and forth. There's only forth. There's no back here. You know, there might be some scattered resistance. But for the most part, you're talking about frightened women and children, and men too, who are just trying to start their lives again. You know, find a place to call home. They're, if I read this correctly, they're evacuating. They're trying to evacuate 90% of the Gaza Strip, which is insane. You can't do that. Where are these people going to go?
It's displacement.
It's, yeah, this is these aren't the people that attacked you. These are innocent people, totally innocent people. They deserve respect. They deserve justice. And the thing is, if you say that, suddenly you become the problem. You know, standing up for people's right to exist, to prosper, you know? And it's especially hurtful for it to be coming from a land like Israel, founded on completely the opposite values and ideals. I don't know. I don't know if there is a solution anymore. There, such harm has been caused by the fascists running this country that I don't think there's a solution. And that scares me. You know, that scares me. And, you know, the rest of the world, guilty in another way, because you have to stand up for justice. If you don't stand up for justice, injustice reigns. It's, you know, simple equation. And that is what we're seeing now. It becomes more normal. And if you speak up in favor of the Palestinian cause, which is basically a land of their own, which why in hell wouldn't you want to do that? Suddenly that becomes the threat, not the fact that people are being massacred. We've been down this road before. I was hoping not to see it again. And, you know, it's kind of funny because, you know, the way Trump disrespects his own base. You're seeing that right now with the whole Epstein saga. He doesn't care about these people. And I know plenty of people who are realizing that who once did support him. It's, you know, we can laugh at it, but we can also use it to learn and to move forward and to realize that a lot of people got hoodwinked. But the way he treats his base, kind of similar to the way Israel is treating the U.S. Because, you know, they say, oh yeah, we'll follow the rules of you know, international law and all that. Then they do something horrible, and they say, oh, did we misinterpret? Well, we're really sorry about that. Won't do it again. We'll do something else. And you can tell even Trump is losing patience. Even Trump is losing patience with Israel. I mean, that is something. So, you know, when you look at the way people act who are in power when they do horrible things, there's almost always a reason in the background for this. And in Netanyahu's case, it's to avoid going to prison. Do you remember? He was on trial. He is a very corrupt person. He belongs in jail. He belongs in The Hague. In fact, everybody, you know, in the whatever they call their the Knesset or whatever, they all belong in The Hague, I think, because they're not doing enough to stop this, or they're not doing anything to stop this. I know there are a few, but not nearly enough. It's similar to to Putin's regime, where yeah, there are a couple of people that might say something, but never goes anywhere, and they don't speak too loudly. And you see this all over the world with all kinds of fascist regimes. It's becoming all the rage now, and I guess, you know, we're going to have to go through that dance again. I'm just impatient. I want my high-speed rail. I want space travel. You know, I want global health care for everybody. And you know, maybe save the climate, too, while we're at it. That would be nice.
Oh, wait, you want to evolve?
That was my,
Sorry, we don't do that here.
That was the understanding when I arrived here, that there would be some evolving that would be happening, but I guess not. Okay, but never let it be said, though, that I cannot admit when I'm wrong. And the events in New York City of recent days have convinced me that, yes, ICE is right. ICE is absolutely right. I mean, look what happened here. Looking at
wait, what?
They're not. Okay, well, you know what? I'm prepared to speak with people like you, who have not yet seen the light. But I'm reading from DHS.gov. Do you know what that is, Kyle? DHS.gov, Department of Homeland Security .government. All right, that's what that is. It's a website. It's a serious website. All right. So these words come from that serious website today. And I'm not making light of this. I am not making light of this. Today, the Department of Homeland Security lodged a detainer. What the hell does that mean? Lodged a detainer? Okay. Against an illegal alien accused of ambushing and shooting a U.S. Customs and Border Patrol officer who was off duty in New York City in Fort Washington Park under the George Washington Bridge on July 19th at approximately 11:51 p.m. ET. Yeah, so basically what happened is that this off-duty ICE agent was ambushed and shot by these two, I'll use their phrase, illegals who were in this country illegally and had a gun and a long rap sheet, and they ambushed him and shot him. And how dare these people say that they want to protect people who are in this country without permission, without authorization. This is what happens when you do that. Excuse me. But then, you know, I started looking at other news stories, other perspectives about this. Now, what happened, happened. There is no question. Two people, undocumented, had a run-in with this guy under the George Washington Bridge. Now, he was sitting there with somebody. I think he was on a date or something. A nice place to sit under the George Washington Bridge. And they show up on a moped, motorcycle. I'm not exactly sure what.
Scooter.
A scooter? Okay. And then one of them gets off the scooter and walks over to where this guy is sitting. So, all right, let's just look at facts and put facts aside when they don't quite add up. That, to me, is not an ambush. An ambush is lying in wait for somebody, you know, calling, you know, for a pizza and then waiting for the pizza guy to show up so you can rob him. That's an ambush. This is a robbery. This is walking down a dark, secluded path and seeing a vulnerable person and attempting to rob them. Now, the robbery didn't go so well because this guy was an off-duty ICE agent. Now, right away, what DHS.gov is implying is that they laid in wait for this guy and attacked him because he was an ICE agent. And what they are doing is they're using this as justification to ramp things up even more. You know, to basically declare war on New York City because of the sanctuary city culture that we have here. But the facts don't really line up with that logic. So they walk up, or one of them walks up this path, and when the off-duty ICE agent realizes what's going on, he draws his gun. Now, I don't know who fired first. My understanding was that it was the ICE agent who fired first. I can't swear that is true, but that is how it was being reported, at least at first. DHS is reporting it in a completely different way. But it's been my experience that when you get into an altercation of any sort, pulling a gun doesn't help. Now, I'm not saying you did the wrong thing. You know, you're being robbed under the George Washington Bridge, and that might be your only option. And what happened to him was terrible. Absolutely. No question about that. But it's very different than being ambushed and shot because you're an ICE agent. That's not the story. The story is this guy was part of a violent crime. He was the victim of a violent crime. Now, would it have been violent if he didn't pull his gun? Who's to say? We don't know. But at least let's report the facts the way they happen. So now you have the situation where it's a robbery under a bridge. And while these things are rare, and violent crime has gone down not only in the city but throughout the country, it's still something that needs to be responded to. Now, how do you respond to this? Well, the way Trump and his ilk are responding is basically to, as I said, declare war on the city and threaten to ramp up ICE agents everywhere. Well, okay, let's look at this. Let's look at some of the facts here. Miguel Francisco Mora Nunez, and again, I'm reading from DHS.gov, so forgive my language, a criminal illegal alien from the Dominican Republic. This makes people sound so awful. Criminal illegal alien. When did he become the criminal illegal alien? Like, for many of these people that spout this kind of rhetoric, it's the moment they set foot on this country. You know, as soon as you get off the boat or whatever and set foot in the United States, you are a criminal illegal alien. So I don't know if they're referring to his rap sheet or just his existence. But he illegally entered the United States on April 4th, 2023, Biden. Says it right there. 2023, Biden. Well, they never lose an opportunity to blame it on Biden. Okay, but 2023, yeah, clearly Biden's reign. He's responsible for every single person that enters the country. So, yeah, that's on him. And I'm not even kidding. He was released by the Biden administration into the country. Okay, so let's look at that statement. He entered the United States on April 4th, 2023, and was released into the country. Now,
due process?
Well, okay, let's look at who he was at that time. Was this a violent criminal? Was this somebody on anyone's radar? Was this someone seeking asylum and given the same chance as everybody else? You get a court date, you show up on that court date, you don't show up, then you're in trouble and exit orders are issued and that kind of thing. That's kind of what the system is. I mean, what else is the system supposed to be? You claim asylum and someone says, no, you don't get asylum. And that happens too. But in this particular case, released, sounds evil, sounds incompetent to do that. But that is how the system has worked. Anyway, and I guarantee people's ancestors were dealt with in a much better way than that. October 11th, 2023, New York City Police Department arrested and charged Nunez with felony grand larceny, petite larceny, and reckless driving. Okay, last I checked, October is well after April. So that is when he started racking up points. October 1st, 2024, a year later, NYPD arrested and charged Nunez with second and third degree assault. On November 30th, 2024, NYPD arrested Nunez for criminal contempt. On January 13th, 2025, he was again attested. He was attested for criminal contempt. This is DHS.gov saying this guy got attested. Does anybody know what they're doing over there? Wow. Unless he was attested. On February 21st, 2025, the Leominster Police Department in Massachusetts issued a criminal warrant for Nunez for armed robbery with a firearm. After failing to show up for his immigration hearing, a judge issued Nunez a final order of removal on November 6, 2024, within Biden's reign. So, okay, this guy is led into the country, commits crimes, and then is kicked out of the country, or at least an order of removal is issued. So, who is it that you want to blame for this? Because, you know, what ICE wants to be able to do is to be able to access databases. You know, if you're accused of jaywalking, they want to be notified if you are undocumented. We cannot trust them. They have demonstrated that time and time again. You see who they are hauling away. It's not people like this. It's dishwashers. It's mothers. It's grandmothers. It's children. It's completely innocent people who are trying to become citizens. They are arresting them in court. You couldn't be closer to an attempt to become a citizen than being in court. They're showing up. They're doing everything they're supposed to do. And we're supposed to trust ICE to only target people like this. You know, if that were the case, I'd be all for it. I think everybody else would be as well. If they can make a promise and stick by it, that they will only target people who are convicted, not accused, convicted, because we do have due process, or at least we used to, well, then you're getting the right people, and justice is being served. But if you give them access, because of an emotional case like this, to everybody who goes through the system, and you let them know where this person's going to be at what time, they will abuse that, as they have been doing. So no, that is completely unacceptable. We are not giving in to these masked thugs that go around intimidating whole communities, because you are worse than the criminals. Now, I don't know what Eric Adams is going to do about this. I mean, he's kind of under Donald Trump's control. They literally took away the charges against him and basically made him their lapdog, where he has to do whatever they say. So until the next election, where hopefully we get a mayor with spine, I wouldn't count on him to do very much. So it's up to us. It's up to us, the people, to stay up to date on this kind of thing. And It's a challenge. It's going to be a real challenge. All right, what else has happened this week? The head of the Federal Emergency Management Agency's Urban Search and Rescue Unit has resigned, telling colleagues he was frustrated by bureaucratic hurdles that the Trump administration imposed that delayed the agency's response to deadly flooding in Texas. Yeah, this is real. The things that were being said about FEMA's response to that horrible disaster were true, because you're hearing it from the inside of FEMA. Response was delayed. Bureaucracy is out of control, and they do not care about these people. Ken Pagarick, who worked with FEMA's search and rescue branch for more than a decade and served as chief for the past year, told associates that his concerns have been mounting since the start of hurricane season and that the administration's changes to the agency were causing chaos. He said he worried about a new policy that requires any purchase of more than $100,000 to be personally approved by Kristi Noem, the Homeland Security Secretary. Yeah, anything over $100,000, she personally has to approve, because she's running this like an elementary school. And he was worried that that could hurt disaster response efforts that require speed and agility. He's absolutely right. Experts have said that responses during a disaster, these are experts saying this, not him, responses during a disaster can quickly total billions of dollars, and that requiring a personal approval for every expense of $100,000 or more could easily create bottlenecks. Now, Mr. Pagarick said this decision was not made lightly, and after much reflection and prayer, it is the right path for me at this time. Now, you know they're going to try and destroy his character. They'll target him because...
None of that matters, though, compared to what he saves in his reputation, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, who would want that kind of liability if you know that that's the way that you're going to be forced to run an agency? All of the blood and malfeasance on his hands? I mean, I would take criticism if I left my self-respect like that.
Yeah, and it is about self-respect. I mean, you know, this guy could easily escape any finger-pointing as far as disaster that happens. I mean, nobody heard of him after Texas Hill Country, you know, when 120 people died in flooding and FEMA was nowhere to be found for a while. So he could easily have continued and not been the scapegoat. Now, though, he has taken a stand. He's been honest. He's stepped forward. And it's already begun. It's already begun. Tricia McLaughlin, the spokeswoman for the Department of Homeland Security, they run the website I was reading from before, said...
Anyone can run a website.
Oh, that's not true, Kyle.
Anyone. A bot could run a website. Come on.
Careful what you say in these times.
A half a bot. Yeah. Not even a full bot could run a website.
Off the Wall is not responsible for the comments of everybody on Off the Wall.
You're listening to WSB Stony Brook.
Yes. Or maybe not anymore. We'll see. It is,
for now.
It is laughable. It is laughable that a career public employee who claims to serve the American people would choose to resign over our refusal to hastily approve a six-figure deployment contract without basic financial oversight. We're being responsible with taxpayer dollars. That's our job. That's not your job. I mean, yeah, you should be responsible, but your job is to take care of disasters, you know, and keep the country safe. And do that in a responsible manner. But instead, it's you know, no, we have to look this over first, and it's on hold until we approve every dollar and cent. Anyway, so that's somebody taking a stand. Another person taking a stand, Steve Colbert. Oh, my God, what they did to him. They canceled... Not only Steve Colbert, but they canceled the entire late-night franchise on CBS, or should I say Paramount. Now, it doesn't take much to realize that this has nothing to do with finances, as they claim. The Late Show with... is it Late Show or Late Night? You know what? I can never tell. That
late
might be part of it.
Is
it Late Show? Okay. Who's Late Night then? Someone's Late Night. Well, it doesn't matter. Steve Colbert, his program was number one in ratings. Now, you can claim that he's still losing money, and anyone in the record industry, anyone in the movie industry can tell you that a production of any sort on paper can be made to quote-unquote lose money. Ask any band how they get screwed by record companies, because they claim that their debut album, even though it was number one everywhere, it lost money. They just balance all the figures so that you wind up actually paying them. And there's all kinds of stories. We can go on for hours about this. Same thing in the movie industry, and definitely the same thing in television. So, yeah, if you want to show a program losing money, you can do that very easily with some creative accounting. And it's all legal, too. So to say that the number one rated television program in late night is losing all this money. And why? Because of streaming? Okay, so let me get this straight. So there are other people doing streaming programs that are making money hand over fist. But somehow, because this show is on television, it can't also be on streaming. There's no way for it to be a part of that. Uh-huh. The logic just does not hold up. So, number one show, obviously making money with advertising and all kinds of viewership. This has to do with speech. Only a couple of days earlier, he was very critical of the Paramount settlement. And, you know, we saw this coming. Every media company, every technology company seems to have fallen to its own cowardice by caving into Trump. And when he accused CBS of doing something nefarious when they edited an interview with Kamala Harris in the fall, you know, something that is so standard and something that he has been a part of many, many times himself, it was an open and shut case. He had nothing. He tried to sue them for billions of dollars. But eventually, they yielded. And they agreed to pay him $16 million. And told themselves that was some kind of a victory because it wasn't billions. And the other thing, I don't know if anybody noticed this, but it's $16 million. And ABC, earlier, was forced to pay him $15 million. I'm sorry, not forced to. They decided to do that. So it's like Paramount had to pay $1 million more just to embarrass themselves even further. Now, Paramount is trying to finish this big merger with CBS and all these networks, and Trump is threatening to hold that up. So they're going to do whatever he says. And canceling Steve Colbert is a way to make Trump feel better. And he's already acknowledged that. He says, boy, I feel great about this. So he's going to be in a much more receptive frame of mind for anything that Paramount wants to do. So they can say it's financial reasons. We all know that's not true. We all know it's because Steve Colbert is a thorn in their side. Thing is, though, he's going to be there for another 10 months. I'm not exactly sure why they agreed to that. I'm sure there's some kind of reason why they couldn't get out of it. But he is going to be there for 10 months. And in that 10 months, if last night's program was any indication, it's going to be one hell of a ride. And I look forward to that. I'm not worried about his future. He's going to be fine. I am worried about our future because we seem to be losing voices one after another. And outlets and ways of feeling like there are more people out there that understand, that care, that are willing to speak out and just continue to be themselves. It's so easy to be intimidated. And we see so many people get intimidated, particularly people with more power, because I guess they have more to lose. And the people who are the real heroes are the ones with almost nothing to lose. So that's kind of crazy. And then almost at the same time, Jon Stewart was on the air with The Daily Show. In fact, every late-night talk show now is addressing this. Now, get this. They're owned by the same network. Comedy Central is also owned by Paramount. And, wow, they took off all the filters last night. They used to bleep certain words. They don't do that anymore. It's almost like they've declared war on their own network. And they spoke out as strongly as Steve Colbert ever did. And I think you will see more people do that because they're people. They're not lawyers and boardroom executives and people looking at the bottom line and ratings and all kinds of things like that. No, they're people that care about the truth. Like we are here at WUSB. Except they make money. I hope people feel emboldened by this. And I hope that people continue to push back as hard as they can.
Yeah, I think we're better connected than we realize, and that network, that strength and support and standing up for one another in being a counter argument to this sort of blandness or capitulation that is expected in this era is itself much more powerful than any of these business dealings. They're themselves inherently closed off and private, and the public is itself a much broader crosscut of society and matters, I think, more in the sociocultural realm. Business is just these dealings and things that happen to benefit very small groups of people. Communication and broadcast is about the masses, the many out there listening and what they're talking about and thinking about amidst the work they do, and how they spend their time outside of that. So this late night tradition being just basically disintegrated and sent off, I think, is itself something that people find unsettling, and it is meant to be uncomfortable. And I really hope that people that have enjoyed it and find use in it will find ways to activate their own networks. Because, as I said, we're much bigger and better connected as an audience.
You know, I hope so too. I fear that it'll be the Twitter effect where things are smashed into all different outlets and we don't reach nearly the same number of people and everybody is fragmented.
Well, in the fragmentation, there is a larger consciousness. So it's already always been fragmented.
Mm-hmm.
The media landscape, the sort of new mediums, new modes and channels and ways of ingesting it. But it's in fact easier for it as a collective idea system, a messaging system, to permeate, because there's so many different modes and mediums for the same messages to get through different chasms between networks. And that itself, that fragmentation with large messages reformed and remixed and remodulated for different avenues actually can be a tremendous and potent benefit or a feature of our modern landscape. But we have to use it intentionally. Mm-hmm. We have to use it that way to cast those large messages and have them actually permeate.
We have to use it, and we have to make it simple for others to use it as well. We can't have this complicated series of steps that need to be taken just to join a social networking site. You know, if something is welcoming and easy to use, intuitive, then yeah, it'll grow. It'll grow and it'll become something that people use. But we can't keep falling into the same trap of being successful and being bought by something else and turned into something that was never meant to be. That happens constantly. You know, Facebook was a good idea when it started, and it could have been useful, as was, you know, Twitter and a lot of these things. We get obsessed with it. It turns into something that it's not, and we just are kind of wandering around in the daze afterwards and not realizing that we've lost the ability to communicate in ways that we used to.
But there are conventions emerging from the way people use these different platforms that enable it that are building upon one another. They're innovating and elevating to a degree. I wouldn't say evolving, but they're definitely transforming the way we use the means of communication, whether it's full visual or now like sort of augmented and a mix of different forms of reality. I mean, there's just so many different things we're adding and layers and pushing the bounds of it, even though some of the actual infrastructure that enables it goes away, the conventions that we establish can be brought to ever new and ever more innovative platforms. And I think that, like you said, just teaching what those conventions are, establishing norms, and bringing in people to understand it so they can either pick it up or decide it isn't for them, but with relative ease. And that takes some care, instead of trying to have like in language and keeping things sort of private and exclusive. That itself, I think, is that harms the ability to democratize the ways we communicate. But there are so many ways to do it, and I think we shouldn't be too daunted by how different and varied a lot of these things are. It's just really that we use them, we have the known conventions that can be shared so that many people have access, and then we get different messages out, and try not to just be needlessly distracted or divergent if we're trying to get across get a broad message across in the midst of a lot of noise.
Well, I've had a lot of conversations with a lot of people over the past week, as I do virtually every week. And one thing that is somewhat comforting is the realization that many of the people that we are working against are really, really terrible people. They really are terrible people. And the thing with terrible people is that they are very, very easy to antagonize. That's why you see Trump reacting to things that a president really shouldn't react to. And that's why you see his underlings also going on personal attacks against private citizens for being private citizens, or attacking an entire class of people, or just being scumbags. There's no other way to say it. Tulsi Gabbard, can't believe many progressives believe she was the answer years ago, but that's okay. You know, we all make mistakes. She's one of those people. She is a director of national intelligence, which is something that scares me at least once a day. Should scare you too. And okay, if not, then listen to this. She has called for Barack Obama and former U.S. national security officials to be prosecuted for treason after things they said about Donald Trump's 2016 presidential election, the one he won. They're still stewing about the criticism that he got for that. Yeah.
Wait, what does that have to do with national intelligence? I just want to know, like, what's the
Russian interference. You know, and I still believe there was Russian interference. It's maybe not exactly the way it was originally portrayed, but there were things going on. There were things going on. And if we ever actually have access to the evidence and people cooperate, we'll learn more about that. But this is intimidation, pure
and
simple.
There was undeniable coziness.
She said Obama and senior officials in his administration had laid the groundwork for a years-long coup against Trump after his victory over Hillary Clinton by manufacturing intelligence to suggest that Russia had tried to influence the election. Does anyone believe that Russia did not try to influence the election? I mean, come on. This is the same Russia that is decimating Ukraine right now. Of course they're going to do something like that. We do things like that, too. There's no question. Post-election intelligence estimates contrasted with findings reached before the election, which indicated that Russia probably was not trying to interfere. In extraordinary comments calling for prosecutions, she added, "The information we are releasing today clearly shows there was a treasonous conspiracy in 2016 committed by officials at the highest level of our government." Well, Tulsi, thought you had to be intelligent to be in intelligence, but apparently not. 2016, Obama was still president. And your people have pretty much made it so that a president can commit any crime he wants. So right away, what are you doing? He's immune. He's immune because of Trump and all the things that he insisted upon. So we want to still have this conversation? Look, there is a lot of evidence out there to suggest that things were happening, and people have the right to make all kinds of statements. The real reason, in my opinion, this came out now is because of all these Epstein shenanigans that are happening and how Trump wants to avoid talking about that more than anything. So you're going to see Martin Luther King files released. You're going to see Obama accused of treason. Who knows what else you're going to see? So, we only have 30 seconds left, so we have to go. But please write to us, otw@2600.com. And, you know, this was our first post-Ozzy show, I just realized. You know, many of us have never lived in a world without Ozzy Osbourne. Isn't that something?
Yeah.
I think we're just coming to terms with that the first time. This has been Off the Wall. Please stay tuned to WUSB. We'll be back next week. Good night.
Yeah, rock on.
Good advice.